to the Big Sky Boneheads podcast. I believe this is episode 41, I think.
Really?
If my count is correct. My name's Michael Gray. His name is Scott Hershey. And we need you to like, rate, review, and subscribe to the show wherever it is that you found it. Got a fun conversation on tap today about Montana history.
With a guy who knows his history and shouldn't, because his own history, his personal history, is not that long.
I've got personal history that's older than this dude's lifespan. Austin Haney, who works with Humanities Montana and a number of other places, he travels all over the state of Montana. He's an absolute nerd for this stuff. And you get to touch on all of it. The Lewis and Clark expeditions, the Stevens expedition, all of the different indigenous communities and the way that they've impacted the area and their stories with their travels. All of the stuff that we get wrong.
Right.
Which I think is hugely important.
Austin's a unique individual. He makes a mark wherever he goes. When he was a college kid on the campus of University of Montana, he was known as the accordion guy. And I'm not kidding you. He plays accordion. He played tuba in the band. He's one of those guys everybody knows, and he talks a little bit about that. He knows people everywhere, and they know him. And his knack for history goes back to when he was a kid, and he knows it all.
It's hard to even read a paragraph about Montana's history without getting really, really interested. And with that, we get to welcome in this guy, historian, teacher, and interpretive ranger, Austin Haney. How are you, man?
I am feeling pretty peachy this morning. How about you guys?
We're doing well, but neither one of us is any kind of ranger. This occurs to me to be something that should be the occupation of a much older human being. You're far too young to be doing all of this, man. How did you get started in history when you're still in your 20s?
Oh, goodness. Well, I think I had a bit of a head start on people. I knew pretty early on what I wanted to do. I had two dreams when I was a little kid. I wanted to be a park ranger, and I wanted to be a tuba player in the UM marching band. I've done both. So,
all right. Well, good. Check the boxes, and now what's next? Start thinking of some new stuff, I guess.
Oh, well, it's quite a road to get here, and it's quite a road while you're in it. My grandpa used to take me to historic sites, and one of the big ones was Little Bighorn Battlefield. So that's kind of what got things rolling on that front. But all through school, just figured, all right, this is what I want to do. This is what I want to do. How do I do it? So I grew up Great Falls area. So the Lewis and Clark Interpretive Center, a lot of people around Montana know that place. And that was really what got it started. Started going there for programs and spending summers there. I did some reenacting there when I got into middle school. Worked in the gift shop. And then finally one day they sat me down and said, you know, you got a history degree. We love having you here. But there's other things out there. Go explore and see what this career can do. And they really pushed me to, you know, leave the nest and, you know, put myself out there. And the Park Service was one place that I looked. So, and
Austin, you know, when you learn, you might be interested in history, but most people don't turn it into a career, into a job. And in order to do that, you have to go past what school teaches you about history. You have to go past what
you do.
But, you know, you have to go out and seek books out, and you have to go out and do some of your own research about, especially if you're going to do it about the state of Montana and not just history in general. Picking one area of history has been what you've done effectively, and knowing the state of Montana's history, you know, we all know it's vast. We all know there's lots of ins and outs to it. But where did you start going to find kind of that extra step to start getting in as in-depth as you wanted it to be?
Well, when other kids in school were reading things like The Hunger Games or God knows what else, I didn't really pay attention. I was reading old college textbooks for history. Looking back, I kind of realized, I'm like, dang, I was a nerdy kid. But no, between all that, a lot of money spent in books. Oh, my goodness. A lot of the online book sellers that sell kind of the weird, uncommon stuff. You get really good at using Google. You get really good at going to bookstores and old shops and, you know, with your head kind of tilted at a 90-degree angle to read all the spines on there, skimming and seeing what looks good and being able to pick out some of those hard-to-find books, because I will tell you what, Montana history is cool. Montana history is awesome, but not a lot of people write about it.
Right.
Yeah, we see things like the Lewis and Clark trail markers and things like that, and we understand a little bit on the surface of what's happened in the state. What? Give us an example. You know, let's get into the history itself about, like, for instance, what aspect of history did you first consider yourself basically an expert about? And what were the interesting aspects of this state that started you off into really getting in depth? Which areas of it?
Well, for me anyways, it all started with Lewis and Clark, but, you know, as you guys probably know well, I love Lewis and Clark. They're my boys, but we talk about them so dang much sometimes, and there's just so much more underneath the surface after and before them that I just find fascinating. So for me, it opened the door. It really did, and I still have a love and passion for it, but it really opened the door to seeing where all these little webs kind of spiral out and just exploring the broader story. For me anyways, I've always been really big into exploration and travel. My poor little Volkswagen, it's 5 years old, and I've already got almost 200,000 miles on it. Just from going everywhere, I love to travel. I love to explore. And I've always found a sort of a spiritual kinship, if you will, with people who go out and explore areas that they've never been before. Doesn't mean that it's new or you're discovering anything, but it's that personal sense of discovery that is really fun. And I think history's kind of very similar in a way, because, well, you're not learning anything that people didn't already know before you. You're just learning it for yourself the first time. It's in itself researching and going through history. It's its own form of exploration and discovery into a different world that you know nothing about.
Well, and Austin, the other thing that occurred to me is that you're keeping it alive, because in a lot of these cases, Montana's history, and this is what fascinates me about it, is that it's not that long ago. You know, you're two people from some of the, you know, some of these historical markers in terms of an average human lifespan. Yeah. But you bring this stuff back to life for people that may or may not ever know about it, because, you know, while it is held knowledge, that only works if it gets passed along. You know, how big of a part of the job is that, making sure people have this stuff at their, have access to this information, all the things that you've learned?
There are stories. Again, history, it's stories in the word. And I love the tie that you made back to just how recent everything is in Montana. I love reading through, just for a great example, one of the recent books that I finished was the Journal of Prince Maximilian of Wied. He was a German prince and amateur ethnographer who came out to central Montana, up the Missouri Breaks into the Fort Benton area in the 1830s. And he's listing off the names of some of the boatmen that are bringing the crew and the cargo. They're bringing it up to the fort near Fort Benton. And I'm looking at all these last names, and it's names I remember from elementary school, kids I went to high school with. That's the beauty of Montana history, is that it's our family stories. It's our own. We have huge ties to it, not to mention just, you know, every single indigenous person in this state has a history more incredible than I could ever dream of. And it's a blessing to be able to hear from people and learn their stories and be able to share stories of their families that they just might not know. I had a kid come into the museum I work at the other day, and he was asking me about one of his grandfathers. And he said, I'm like, all right, what's your grandfather's name? And he mentions this guy, James Kipp. And I'm sitting here thinking, like, do you have any idea how incredible that is? And the stories behind, for those who don't know, he was a major player in the fur trade. And there are people across Montana that have family ties to that story. And it's just incredible to think. I want to actually ask you guys a question here.
Okay.
And this
I flunked history, by the way. That was a terrible class for me.
Oh, that's okay. No disrespect meant to teachers out there. I think they deserve more than what they get in this life. They do an incredible job and an incredible service for, you know, our generations coming down the line. But I have a tendency to feel that sometimes history can be boring in school, you know, because people don't make it come alive. And I think establishing a personal connection is so big. It's so huge into getting people interested in their stories and the history of the places and the people around them. But my question for you, and this goes out to the audience as well. It's an exercise I do in my programs. I want you guys to think of the oldest person you ever met.
Yep.
Okay.
All right. What do we got?
Well, I met the oldest man in the world at one point, had a conversation.
Oh, so
with
did
him.
I. So we got so, the same.
Yeah. Are we talking about Walter?
Mr. Walter.
Walter Brunig, yeah, down. Lived in Great yep. Falls. I had a conversation with him about his early life. I was lucky enough to have my daughter do an interview with him about just that.
Wow.
So I kind of had a little privilege of talking to him.
Very nice. Yeah, so that is a great example. That you knew a man who was born in the 19th century.
Right.
You know? Now think of the oldest person that your oldest person ever met.
Right.
And that's
all how of a sudden it shrinks.
Yeah, that's how you go back. That's why I was mentioning with Montana's history. It's two people ago, really. If you go with a long lifespan, you can go back a couple, you know, 180 years real fast. And,
oh, yeah.
And so much of Montana's history is fascinating to me in that regard, because you can stumble across it. You go out on a hike in the woods, you go hunting somewhere, and all of a sudden trip over some mining remains. You trip over an old cabin. Oh, yeah. There's some old history happening out there. What caught you? What is the one story that you – I mean, you probably can't pick your favorite kid, right? I'm not asking you to do that.
Yeah, no.
but what – you know, because I've got a couple that I've stumbled across reading books and different things where I just get fascinated by it. Have you got a couple that have stuck out to you where you just went down that rabbit hole and couldn't get enough of it?
Oh, goodness. For me, definitely I love the stories of some of the early fur traders that came through. David Thompson – is one that you don't hear a lot in Montana, but you hear a lot in Canada. The man explored all over north central Canada and even down into Montana, right on the heels of Lewis and Clark, and nobody talks about him. And just some of the interesting little tidbits that you find in these original accounts, these journals, it's absolutely incredible. Another one that I really have developed quite a passion for in the last couple of years is the Stevens expeditions in 1853. For me, that expedition, it's like Lewis and Clark on steroids, but slightly crazier. So with the Stevens expedition, they go all over Montana. They meet a lot of people that you find going back through Maximilian's journals, even some people who remember Lewis and Clark. It's absolutely incredible just the wide array of people that they're meeting and the stories that they're tying into. And just some of the oddities. I'm a big material culture guy. I like kooky, old, weird stuff. Just as an example of that, the Stevens expedition, they had two inflatable rubber boats with them. Who would have thought of that in the 1850s?
Yeah, no kidding.
They get them from Cabela's? Is that where they got them?
Ironically, they look like you could probably find one in a Cabela's if you went down.
I can't imagine inflating them. What are you?
Oh, goodness. I feel bad for the poor.
Yeah.
You know, the trader that they're making, like, hey, you, your job is to blow up this boat.
You take a break when you're lightheaded.
Oh, jeez.
Well, one thing I've heard about you, Austin, when you give presentations is people say, you know, you make it entertaining, you make it funny, you make it engaging, as opposed to those boring history classes we were talking about. Give us an example of something that makes the crowd laugh every time. You're giving a presentation, you know this one's coming, you know something about this story is going to gather, you know, get people's attention and make them chuckle a bit. Give us one of those.
One of my favorites to talk about is I love talking about the chaos of the 1850s, particularly when it comes to, as I introduce him, our hapless hero, the greatest American president you've never heard about, Franklin Pierce. And the looks you get on people's faces when you say Franklin Pierce, they're like, what is this guy talking about?
It just happened in the room. It just happened in the studio.
Who's that?
We both looked at each other like, man, I should know which one that is. Which one is that?
Yeah. How do I put this? He's just fun to talk about. And the look on people's faces when you describe some of his ideas and his connection to Montana. He's the president that sort of authorized these railroad surveys. But how do I put this? very pertinent to know for modern day. We can learn a lot from Franklin Pierce. But he's essentially the guy they elect because they hate him the least.
Sounds familiar.
Yeah, I was going to say, fast forward to 2024, and here we are.
You can learn a lot from history, but he essentially tries to please everybody. And you know the old saying, when you try and please everybody, you please nobody.
Mm-hmm.
He essentially is the guy who blows everything up and just makes it worse. It's a tragic comedy. That's one that people always just kind of like, oh boy, the nervous laughter from the tragic comedy is always fun. In one of my fishing programs, I talk a little bit about historic fishing, and in the Lewis and Clark section, we're talking about how they got tired of salmon. And you can read it in the journals. They started buying dogs to have red meat. Instead of salmon, they just got tired. And, you know, you imagine cedar plank salmon. Man, I would love that. But these poor Lewis and Clark guys, they're sitting down having dog for dinner. 193 to be exact. That's how many dogs they ate.
Wow.
On the expedition.
They kept a count?
Oh, well, no, they didn't keep a count. But there have been Lewis and Clark buffs out there who've tallied it up.
No kidding.
And that's the thing about a lot of this history is there's so much unsavory parts of it that people gloss over, and you know, people who read the journals and read them over again and really pay attention to what's going on can find stuff like that that might not be the greatest thing for them today in their image. Maybe their PR wouldn't be quite as good as Lewis and Clark's is, but I mean, it's just the way it had to be.
Well, yes, it's one of those things where I don't know if something had to be that way. It's not always the case, but some cases, yes. But the punchline for that, by the way, after I describe sitting down and having dog for dinner, I always love it if someone's got a pet in the audience. I look and I'm like, and this is why we ask you to leave your dogs in the car. Sometimes the staff gets hungry.
Hey, you gotta be realistic here. You're trying to reenact history.
And I'm not.
Oh, goodness.
I'm not going to lie. That salmon is what I was going to make for dinner tonight, and now I'm going to have to change lanes because I'm not going to be able to get my dogs out of my head. Man.
Well, if you're like Clark, just put salt on it, and you'll be able to handle anything.
I'm going to look at it. You know what? I'll do that. I'll talk to my dogs. You know, it could have been you. I brought home fish. You can count your lucky stars. Austin, I'm curious. You mentioned it already once. You know, so much of the recent history that you and I have kind of alluded to is the history of the railroads and settlements and exploration. What kind of connection do you have with the indigenous population, and what have you learned in that regard? Because obviously, all of those folks coming over from Washington D.C. weren't the first ones here.
Oh goodness, no. Indigenous history is some of the most incredible to learn about in Montana. I've been very blessed to have friends on just about every reservation in the state and beyond. One of my really good friends is actually a fellow historian, but he's up in Alberta. He does work with the Métis Nation up there. So for me anyways, I always like to say that I'm no expert in Indigenous history. I'm just blessed to be able to know and share what I've had shared with me. And that's the thing. So much history is you just explore and you talk to people and you learn. And especially with Indigenous history, it's important to develop those personal connections with people to hear their experiences and their stories. And, you know, it always starts with people first. That's the big thing. It's always people, be it 150 years ago or, you know, right down the street today. You know, everyone's got a story. Everyone's got a tie to this history. It's all of our stories.
And that aspect of it,
I think, just developing that personal connection is just so big.
Well, that aspect of it, of the state before it was a state, and just what geographically this area goes way farther back. We're talking about how young Montana history is. It's because we're using the term Montana. How far does your knowledge go back in tribe history and in regards to Indigenous people?
It depends on the group of people, and it depends on, you know, just how much I've had shared with me. But my primary focus has always been sort of that 1600 to about 1900 period. That's where most of my focus has been. There's been some incredible work by ethnographers and historians in the past who talked to elders in the past to learn about some of the really old stuff. But it's important today to be, you know, able to talk to these elders and know their own stories, because, you know, so much of those memories get transferred down that you just never know. A great example of this is I had the great fortune of it's not a Montana tribe per se, but they have a lot of experiences here in Montana. The Nez Perce people, Nimiipuu, spent a lot of time in Montana hunting buffalo. They were very connected with the Salish and the Ponderay peoples and the Crow. And I've been very blessed to hear stories and, you know, their own histories from some of the elders out there. The Slickpoos are another good one to mention there. They were very, very good historians. Very, very blessed to be able to have conversations with them and learn more.
Also, so one of the things that I thought about as you were talking about that is in history of Montana. Montana has never been more popular as far as people are concerned across the United States than they are right now.
Oh, goodness.
Yellowstone, I'm sure. I don't know if you've seen any of that, but that's kind of what I was going to get into is we had a discussion, we had an earlier podcast with one of the guys who was heavily involved in River Runs Through It. In watching historically set movies, does it drive you crazy, no, or do you like them?
90% of the time, it kills me. I can't take it. my family has basically stopped watching movies, historic films with me. My friends know. Because how do I put this? Half of the enjoyment of a historical film for me is picking apart and complaining about it.
I would imagine. That's wrong. That's wrong. They made that part up. That's no good.
Oh, goodness. And as someone who's traveled as much as I have and loves landscapes and locations, I always love it when I'm watching a show and it says, wow, this is taking place in New Mexico, and it's filmed literally outside of Banff.
Not New Mexico at all.
It's like, that's not New Mexico, but that's Canada.
Well, I think with some of the movie stuff going on, I mean, there's an opportunity. You could become a movie accuracy expert and help them out with some of this stuff. Maybe if you were consulted for some of that.
I have been propositioned that in the past. It my advice was not taken. I will just say that I will not. I will not say the film, well, moreover the show that declined my services, but I will never forget we're getting costumed for this. And I do historical reenactments and I make a lot of historic garments, but I'll never forget, you know, a call went out for, you know, reenactors and people to come do this scene. We're going to do some fur traders. And I will never forget how just done with everything I was. They put on a caveman poncho.
Oh no.
Something that just I'm like no, nobody wore this, man. Look at any photo from this year of history, and no one's wearing this. Come on. They're strapping all this random junk to my arms, and they drape a coyote skin around my neck because I needed more fur. And then the kicker. Oh, the kicker. They still don't think I have enough fur, so they're like, all right, let's go in the fur box. And they pull out this beaver hide. And this guy goes, ooh, grizzly bear. And by that point, I'm just like, oh, my God, no. Oh, what am I doing? And they strap this beaver onto my leg. And I'm walking around like a peg leg, beaver leg pirate. And it's like, I'm gonna trade you some furs there, matey, kind of thing.
Like, oh, no.
Oh, it was so bad. Oh, it was so bad.
Do you have to stop
yourself? As wonderful as that would be, they don't always listen.
Oh, I bet not. Right. You know, I mean, Clark Griswold went and got his tree from Colorado.
That's right.
That show's supposed to be in Chicago. It drives me nuts every time I watch it. Not exactly a historical reenactment, but I'm like, I've been through Illinois.
Right.
There isn't a mountain anywhere near that joint.
Yeah, we even brought it up to the River Runs Through It. On that podcast, we brought up the fact that he was running his date back to Wolf Creek from Missoula, and he's going to do it in the same day in a Model A. So,
yeah, on a dirt road.
Right.
You know, it's just one of those things where it's like, I get it. There's limitations in film, but there are ways to do. There are ways to do things, and make it work. Great example of a film done right, if you will, as far as historical accuracy goes. Oh, good gracious! I'm struggling to think of one.
Yeah, I'll bet.
There are little things you can nitpick about a lot. But you're never going to get it 100%. Even in a reenactment, you can't. And as historians, we can only get close with what we know. So I guess, you know, it's the pot calling the kettle black, you know. But still drives me crazy.
Austin, how does that bleed over into regular life in terms of nostalgia with things as they go away? Because anything that's a historical artifact is in a state of decay. You know, in some cases, I have a real romantic spot in my heart for Butte. I don't know if it's just because I'm an industrial city kid, but the first time I drove through that town, I looked around, I'm like, oh, wow, it's all still here. Mm-hmm. Like, you can see it. You don't have to close your eyes and imagine it. But as all things with Montana, it's being modernized. There's spillover from the Bozeman area, cheap real estate, relatively speaking, to the rest of the state is still available. And sometimes those old buildings, it's neat that somebody's doing something new with it. They want to put in apartments and a speakeasy or whatever. But then you lose that. Do you find yourself pining away for that? Or are you happy to see the story continue in a new direction? How does that affect you on a personal level?
For me, anyways, I would much rather always see somebody revitalize a historic structure rather than tear it down. For me, anyways, a great example, when I lived in Missoula, the Missoula Mercantile Building was a great example of something that I feel they shouldn't have done. That building deserved to be revitalized and turned into something new instead of completely torn down and totally brand new. So for me, you know, with nostalgia, it's always important to, you know, remember that the past isn't always better. The aesthetics a lot of times can be better. I will not argue that, but there are things about the past where it's like, all right, it's good that is no longer here. But for me anyways, revitalizing these old structures, revitalizing places and keeping them relevant in today's Montana, I think that's absolutely a win. I mean, it might not be perfect, but I'd rather have most of that building there than have none of it at all.
Is there a favorite part of the state that you go to over and over again just to see things like that, just to see the old history
and why,
and know what these buildings are all about?
And why is it Virginia City?
Well, number one, the controversial opinion, but I wish those buildings were all still up in Great Falls and the Nevada City ones, the old Bovee collection.
Okay.
For those who don't know their history, that all used to be in Pioneertown in Great Falls at the fairgrounds.
No kidding.
Wow.
And I can hear the pitchforks and the torches down in Virginia City and Nevada City, you know, being brought out and lit up, and they're going to be marching straight north for me right now. But
they moved those were all originally in Great Falls.
Some of them, a lot of those Bovey buildings were really? Originally Great Falls. Yeah, not all of them. Not all.
Okay.
Of them, but there were quite a few. So
if I walk into
those... Don't hate me, Virginia City, Nevada City. I love you guys, but as a Great Falls kid, you can give them back anytime, guys. I will love you forever for it. But for my own interest, I love that area. Bannack is also a really big one. It's hard for me because I love all the unique buildings. Across Montana, a great example of that is in Chinook. The building I live in is almost 130 years old, and you know it's just a giant brick block. I mean, there's one in every town across Montana almost, but it's mine, if you will. Because it's in my town, but.
And again,
so I got a fondness for that. But
to remind people, Austin is in his 20s.
Yeah.
And I know that you, because I've known Austin's dad for a really long time, and I know that you started on this at such a young age. You had to be a nightmare to travel with as a kid wanting to stop by every historical marker in the state of Montana.
Yeah.
A lot of us cruise right by those and have no idea what they say because some of them are in the middle of nowhere, and you're like, it's pointing at a hill. I don't know what that is. But you had to have wanted to stop at everyone.
I stop at everyone that I come across, and unless I've already been by it. And even then, sometimes I don't care if I've driven by it 100 times. I just like the story and the place so much, I'll stop.
And there has to be a bit I called you a little bit of a savant before we started this podcast, Mike, because there's got to be the ability to retain this stuff as well. I mean, not just the interest and not just the knowledge of reading it, but retaining so much of it is something I think the average person, you only do it with something you love, right?
Oh, definitely.
It sounds like definitely. You've retained it all.
I don't know about all of it. It comes and goes at times, and I've sort of sacrificed some of my memory data, if you will, on stuff that happened, you know, 200 years ago, as opposed to last week. I can't tell you, you know, half of what I did last week, but you know, ask me what David Thompson was doing in the Libby area in 1808. Now I'll tell you what he did.
All right, let me ask you a different question. How does historian rank when it comes time for your personal life? You know, you're setting up a Tinder profile. Is that a getter? I mean, is that a closer? Because that's at least unique, man. I've had a lot of lame jobs before that didn't help me at all, but it occurs to me that, nerdy as it may be, this one's probably at least interesting.
It's interesting. I can't say it's hurt me. I can't say it's helped me. that's the thing is it takes very, very particular people to be able to put up with the levels of nerdiness, if you will. You know, because like you said, when you're on a road trip, you're always wanting to stop at every little sign. You're wanting to stop at like, oh, there's this museum over there that I've never been to, and I really want to check that out. Or, oh, there's this park that such and such event happened over there, or there's a building, or there's a million and one things that are going to completely derail whatever it is that you're doing. If any of you with kids have seen the movie Up.
Oh yeah. Yep.
You know, the dog where
squirrel.
They see the squirrel. Yeah. That's kind of what it's like with a history, if you will. Everywhere you go, it's like, oh, wow, so-and-so was over here. It's like, oh, this happened here. But
so, Austin, I know that you do.
It doesn't help.
I know that you do presentations. I know you've done some stuff with Humanities Montana. What are you where do people find, like, a presentation about this? How do they follow along with your schedule and what you're doing in regards to all of this history?
Oh, goodness. Of course, the Humanities Montana website has my two programs up there. You can literally get on there and send me an email. It's got my email on there. Send me an email with question, or if you want to book a program, that's really what it's supposed to be for. Don't just email me randomly and be like, hey, what was David Thompson doing in Libya in 1808?
Right. Here's a picture of a rock. Does this look like an arrowhead?
but that's kind of what it's for. But no, definitely that's a great way. Some of my work is on YouTube. But generally speaking, I kind of feel like a historical Forrest Gump. You never know where I'm going to end up. I just sort of turn up randomly at different places.
And those two programs you have going right now, what are the subjects of those?
Oh, goodness. Well, one of them is on that Stevens expedition that I was telling you a little bit about. And then the other is sort of my love letter to northern Montana. That's really my favorite part of the state just because I grew up in that part. And it's where I live. And it's what I really, really find fascinating. I feel it gets kind of pushed to the side for some other stories in the state. But there's just so much incredible stuff up here. And, you know, when I made that program, I wanted people on the High Line, people in the Great Falls area, people out in Plentywood and Scobie, you know, to be able to look and, you know, people on the Blackfoot Reservation, people on Fort Belknap and Fort Peck, and be able to look and say, wow, our part of Montana is special too. So anyways, if that piques your fancy, get a hold of me.
Well, Austin, what have you got on deck for 2024? What do you know you're going to be doing? What are you looking forward to?
Some of the big ones, I'm going to be talking about Stevens all over the state. I just finished up one in Fort Benton. Later in the summer, I'll be down in Hamilton talking about that. But the big thing for me, if any of you guys are free, come on down to Fort Benton Summer Celebration. I'll be putting together a reenactment of the fort in 1875. And there's going to be people coming from all over the West to be part of this. Pays to have a lot of friends. I got friends everywhere, and I'm very blessed. So if you guys want to come and experience history, you know, come on down Fort Benton for summer celebration and say hey at the fort.
There you go. That's a fun event anyway. So check it out. Austin, thank you so much for your time.
Oh, of course.
We appreciate it. And you've got to write a book soon. So if you do, let us know. And we will.
I have ideas.
I'll bet you do.
Thanks for putting up with my rambly self for the last 40 minutes.
Thanks, Austin.
Oh, of course. Thanks, guys.
All right, that was Austin Haney. A fascinating conversation, and one that could have gone on for another hour. You get an idea of just how much of this stuff this dude knows. I bet you if you ask him his Social Security number, he can't tell you, though. Because there's no way your brain can survive with all of that knowledge.
But
something's got to go.
He knows every expedition, every explorer right. In the state, and it's really cool. It's really cool to talk to somebody who knows that much.
Oh, yeah. No, I can't tell you what the ingredients for macaroni and cheese is, but take him to the big hole battlefield and then get a chair because you're going to need to get comfortable. My man knows his stuff. I feel totally differently about Virginia City now. I feel so stupid. I didn't know those were all Great Falls buildings.
I didn't know that. I lived in Great Falls.
I didn't know any of that. I'm going to walk into the Wells Fargo. You imposters! Give Austin his building back.
I think the bar is authentic. I think that bar is still.
Yeah, then
I believe the bar is authentic, and that's the important part about Virginia City.
What is it? The hay barn?
The hay bale.
The hay bale.
Yes.
Yeah. If I'll tell you what, if it's not authentic, then tip of the cap to whoever moved it because it looks heavy. Exactly. That's another whole bag of cats. We could just talk about the process of moving those buildings. But thanks again to Austin. We check the show notes. We'll have the links up to Humanities Montana. And then, obviously, if you have any interest about this, follow his advice. Go to Fort Benton. Go up to the summer celebration. Yep. You don't need an excuse to go to Fort Benton. There's always that's a great little piece of Montana history right there in a cool little town. So go and be a part of that. Thanks again to Austin. We will be back next week. Remember, rate, review, and subscribe to the show wherever it is you found it. That's how we get to do what we do. Please share it on your social media links if you are so inclined. And we will be back next week.